Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to another Stood Up edition of the Alabama Football Podcast, interview edition. So I think I've got a fledgling sort of niche market here in the podcast arena. Schedule interviews with other teams, prep for it, have a handful of questions, hopefully good questions, and hop on the line and no one shows up. So I take that and I say, you know what, I'm just going to do a solo podcast and I'm going to ask the questions, share what I was thinking, and maybe even answer some of the questions and go from there. We did this for the SEC championship game when we had sort of a scheduling, last minute sort of scheduling conflict with the Florida site. And we have this again with Ohio State. No hard feelings. It's just the nature of it. And it's the way it goes. What we're going to try to do is we're going to see if we can't reschedule and get something out between now and the ball game. But nonetheless, didn't want to lose the prep. Didn't want to lose the questions. Didn't want to lose sort of the thought process that that I was carrying through this. So let me run through these. I'll try to make this relatively quick, but just want to throw out some of the content that we have here. And like I said, I spent a little time pulling it together, so didn't want it all to go down the drain. I know you guys enjoy some of this stuff, so kind of here we go. I was gonna, you know, a little bit of, you know, form and structure, right? Gonna start off I'm gonna say interview, but you know, conversation. Gonna start off the conversation with an appropriate, a fair, a deserved congratulations for Ohio State's really just dismantling of Clemson. That was an impressive performance. You say what you want to about the Big Ten, say what you want to about game count, say what you want to about whatever it is that you want to say. Between the chalk lines that night, that was an impressive performance by Ohio State. And so I wanted to ask that. I wanted to sort of spin that into a question, spin that into some dialogue, certainly some congratulations, but some dialogue as well. And so I was going to go down the path of, from the perspective of the Ohio State fan base, how would you characterize that game? Did that game play out exactly like you expected it? Was it a complete wild surprise? Was there thoughts that Ohio State might lose the game? Was there relief? Hey, we think we can beat these guys. It's sort of a mountain crest opportunity. And so there's relief, elation, but also just relief at it happening. Or was this just an absolute revelation? We didn't expect this. We didn't know where this came from. We've never seen such a balanced performance. I think those are true statements for this year's Ohio State team. And so I just wanted to sort of get a range on a continuum. How did he sort of take the pulse of the Ohio State fan base? What were his thoughts? And so I thought that would have been an interesting conversation. You know, their performance level, Ohio State's performance level was, I thought was very high. And it was a complete game in all phases, the passing game, the running game, defense. something that they've not yet done before this season. I was going to take that concept, the fact that they've really fired on all cylinders, and something that hasn't been seen this season. And I was going to spin that into a conversation or questions around the shortened season. There's an inflection point where you haven't played enough games. And above that inflection point, the team has sort of matured a little bit. There's still room for the conversation. Did they play enough to qualify for the championships? And I wasn't going to go that direction. I think they demonstrated that they can compete. Did they play enough games? I think that's a different conversation. I think they showed that they competed. Had they played a couple of more games, likely they would still be just as good. I know there's an attrition factor with injury, but let's face it, they look pretty good on the field. Can we agree with that? The conversation that I wanted to have is around sort of the maturation of the team. At what level was there concern that, hey, we know we're really good, but this team isn't a fully baked product yet? Trey Sermon has really only just burst on the scene the last couple of games. The offensive line, the depth and the rotation of the offensive line has progressed throughout the season. The defense, we talk about the Alabama defense improving from the Ole Miss game, which was our game three for sort of a reference point. Their game against Indiana earlier in the season, they considered that a sort of a failure or a flopping of their defense. And they've talked about, I read a handful of articles and listened to a couple of podcasts for Ohio State. And so they were very much talking along the lines of, our defense has improved. It's been a work in process. It has improved. And so their conversations have in some regards, sort of mirrored ours. And from an Alabama perspective, we're glad that we've had those extra games to really sort of entrench that this defense has some capability. They're not world beaters. Florida exposed some things from the defense. You could loosely argue that Notre Dame did. I don't know that I buy that. But nonetheless, the Alabama team has been a work in process. What week was it during the season after Waddle went down and we were looking for another offensive playmaker to burst out, and Jaleel Billingsley did? That was week 7 or 8 anyways. And not just game week, but calendar week. So I think we played 6. And then there was 2 weeks off, so that's 8. So it was week 9 of the season before Billingsley really sort of burst in the season. And so you think about from an Ohio State perspective, I don't know that they've even played that many games. And so do they have a gear that they just haven't had a chance to mature into? I don't know the answer to that question. We talk about defense improving. Sean Wade is one of their top corners. Well, last year, he had relative success as a slot corner, and they moved him to the outside. And this season, he hasn't – I mean, I don't want to denigrate the guy, but he has not lived up to the expectation. He's not lived up to their standard, Ohio State standard, for an outside corner. They've had, I think, 4 of the last 5 drafts. They've had first-round picks at the corner spot. And so is Sean Wade that caliber? I was not in an attacking way, but I was going to get into that conversation. What was his thought there? And then I was going to go offense and then defense and really talk about some individual players and just, you know, sort of collect his thoughts, having him elaborate on how these individual players have performed. So I'll go through these pretty quick, sort of the thought process that I had and what we were going to try to tease out of that conversation. I was going to talk about Trey Sermon. He's a running back transfer from Oklahoma. Again, he has just made hay the last 3 weeks, over 300 yards, setting an Ohio State record against Northwestern, and then right at 200. I think he had a 180 against Clemson. Really, I was going to talk about him as like an old school. I think he had 30 carries against Clemson. 30 carries is a big number. And so that starts to look at like an old school feature back with the production, the amount of carries, and then just the proportion. You think 30 carries, the proportion of the offense that they ran through Trey Sermon. That's something that didn't exist in sort of their repertoire a couple of, even just a few weeks ago, I don't think. And so I was going to sort of poke at that, get some perspective there. The fact that he has emerged on the scene, I'm glad we've seen it, right? And so the defense and the coaching staff can prepare for it, but it makes a harder preparation, right? Because they're balanced running and passing. And that's something that, as Alabama fans, we take a lot of pride in too. If you go to stop the pass, Najee's going to beat you. If you go to stop the run, the passing game will beat you. And so they have that type of versatility. Ohio State does. Talk about healthy across the offensive line. They have an All-America guard that went out against Clemson. He came back in. So I was going to see what relative health concerns or thoughts they had there. Also, I had a guard that stepped in, backup guard the other side. I want to say left guard that lost in my notes. Matthew Jones stepped in for Harry Miller. Harry Miller had a COVID situation, so not an injury, but missed some time. And so how were they relative to 100% with their top five or front five across the offensive line? Wanted to talk about Chris Olave, the wide receiver. And so he missed the Northwestern game and was back for the Clemson game. And it really seemed to open up their offense. I think if you had sort of an Olympic style or combine style gauntlet test or athleticism test, I think that Garrett Wilson would probably win that over Chris Olave. But when you look at who is the receiver that sort of makes the offense go, it appears to be, and I'm looking at a limited sample size, it appears to be Olave. And that can be true for a couple of different reasons. Garrett's a freshman. Olave is, I think, a junior. And so he has more time in the system, more familiarity and experience sort of running the college offense or running with a college offense. So I was going to have Tim speak to that a little bit, sort of, you know, what should we look for with these two wide receiver weapons? What do they bring to the table that's a little bit different? And then just talk about Olave and maybe how he is a potential key to the Ohio State offense. I think that, and I would not have inserted this thought in the conversation, but I do think that I like the Alabama cornerbacks. I really, really do. And so I think if we match them up one-to-one, maybe some safety high, maybe dual high safeties sort of over the top so you can work in some bracket. And if we do that from a nickel or dime, I think we can still have some guys in the box. And so I kind of like what we can do there. I don't think we should do that all the time, the Alabama defense, but I think that's something that we can work in, especially on passing downs. Let's take away some of these top receivers. They also have a senior tight end. Name escapes me, but I think he's a potential weapon, and I think Tim would have brought him up, spoke to him a little bit. And so we would have poked at, you know, the tight ends historically sort of given us fits this season. I was going to kid that I buried the lead, and I wanted to talk about Justin Fields. Again, compliment just the gritty performance that he showed the other night. I think he got a couple of pain shots with no diagnosis in the tent, went back out on the game. We can talk about that's a little sort of shady behavior potentially. I don't know how we would think about that if that were our guy. But wanted to talk about, and I do think, and whatever we think about whoever they are, it was a pretty darn gritty performance that Justin Fields demonstrated, knowing that he had in some way, you know, he was hit really hard. And so whether it's cracked or bruised or bumped ribs, he was in a lot of pain. And some of the passes that he unleashed down the field, given that injury, that's just a hats off performance for that young man. I can speak sort of personally. I had, this has been a handful of years ago, but I had a motorcycle accident once, and I think I bruised a couple of ribs, and it was the most painful thing I think I've ever experienced. A sneeze was like a portal to hell, just the level of pain. And to think about, all I wanted to do is just curl up and sleep for a couple of weeks. And to think that he's going to go back out there and sling the ball down the field and potentially get hit and whatnot. Maybe it's the adrenaline of the moment. But if that's how you feel on a day-to-day basis and you know there's a game coming up in 6, 5, 4, 3, 2 days, what level of anxiety must you be feeling? And so I was going to sort of get into that conversation. I was going to ask what he's hearing, what's his expectation relative to health for Justin Fields. And again, not knocking Justin Fields that he's hurt, not even suggesting that they're trying to delay the game to get him healthy, all that sort of banter that we're hearing. I just straight up respect the grit that the kid demonstrated. And I know that if reports are true or speculation is true relative to the type of injury, then I do think there's some anxiety that he might be feeling leading up to the game. And so, again, wanted to poke at that. I thought that was an interesting sort of topic or concept. I was going to flip the field just like we do and talk secondary. Again, I mentioned Sean Wade again. I was going to, and so I probably sort of burned all my powder on that one, on that topic. But I was going to talk about Shane Wade, a slot corner, moved to the outside. That he is a work. He appears to remain a work in progress, and so I wanted, and that's what I'm hearing from reports and such. Reading some articles. I haven't broke down the guy's tape. Don't get me wrong, but that seems to be the narrative. And so I was going to have, Tim talked about that a little bit. I was going to have him rate, where does he think Sean Wade stacks up with some of the other corners that have come through Ohio State. And again, they've had some really good ones. And so the idea is, hey, how do you rank them? And then I was going to ask more of a point blank question. He's got a tall task on Monday stacked up against, call it Smitty. What's your thought on his relative level of readiness and what's your expectation on that type of thing? Is Wade someone that Ohio State anticipates, or that you think is a long-term observer? Is he someone that can, you think, take Smitty one-on-one, or is that going to sort of lean coverage? What might that look like? And so hoping to get some sort of inside thought on, are they going to run a lot of zone or a lot of man-to-man? Are they going to run a lot of double coverage? Are they going to run a lot? Not that I'm going to run the same and share all this stuff, because it's just some insight. How might we expect them? And then can we exploit that if Waddle were to play, Mechie, Jahlil, and of course the running game? And again, I wasn't going to get into breaking it down and that they can't cover and all that stuff, but I wanted to get just pure, honest, straight up the Ohio State perspective on that. So hopefully we'll still be able to do that because I would like to hear this fellow's perspective. He's a longtime journalist with a newspaper in Columbus. I listened to a couple of his podcasts, a couple of his interviews. He's been following the team since the 70s, since maybe the 80s, but for just forever, he's been really, really close in with Ohio State and just really well connected. A couple of podcasts, he has a podcast, a couple of interviews he's done with, listened to part of one with Orlando Pace. He has Herbie on a lot. Listened to just a small portion of one he did with Urban Meyer. And so I rate that as pretty well connected. And I was probably going to work in a joke somewhere along the line that he is what I want to be when I grow up. Just a reservoir of knowledge about the program, past games, past experiences, and then connected, able to have those types of guests on his shows, just phenomenal. And so I think he would have some incredible insight around some of these topics. That's where I was going with sort of that rant. I was going to talk about the defensive front seven, and I probably was even getting a kid that when we think about defense, typically you start defensive line and you work back. And I was specifically starting in the secondary because I think that's where a lot of the Alabama attack will go. And so I was going to sort of make a joke that I'm going to work out in instead of in out, front to back, back to front. But I was going to talk about the front seven, and I was a little more wide open, but I was going to ask, who should Alabama fans watch for? And I suspect he was going to talk about Tuff Borland, one of the linebackers. I think he's one of the leading tacklers on the team. Defensive tackle Tommy, and I'm going to mispronounce this, but it's Togini. Defensive tackle Haskell Garrett. Isn't that a Ohio State name? They had a Haskins quarterback. They've got a receiver named Garrett, and so they've got a tackle named Haskell Garrett. I thought that's just the most Ohio State name ever. I think he's a big high motor guy, and then they have a defensive end, Jonathan Cooper, which is so considering they had a head coach named John Cooper. That's another Ohio State styled name. And so that was great. But I suspect those are the guys that he would talk about up front. I do think this may be one of the better defensive fronts that Alabama has seen. So I do think that's something we need to watch out for. And then if he didn't bring up Justin Hilliard, I was going to bring up Justin Hilliard and just say, well, he must be everyone's sort of fan favorite. Why don't you, tell us a little bit about, sort of the Justin Hilliard story. And Justin is a sixth-year linebacker, not probably too dissimilar from our Josh McMillan, right? He's a sixth-year linebacker. He is starting. Our guy's not. He's starting. He has had multiple. He's had multiple season-ending injuries. He has ruptured both biceps separately. And then had an Achilles injury as well. And he, as people do, especially with the COVID season, he's asked, hey, are you going to come back and play a seventh season at Ohio State? And I thought his comment was pretty interesting. Justin said, I'm preparing. This is my last game. He said, physically, I don't know that my body has anything more to give Ohio State football. And I thought that was pretty neat. But apparently he's a guy that's been around the program, has really gone through some adversity. There was a neat article that I read that said, when he committed, so he's in his sixth year, when he committed as either a junior or senior in high school, whenever it was, he was a five-star. There was another five-star that committed on the same day. So it was kind of one of those historical commitment days that we would remember too. And to sort of wrap some thought around that, they said that at the time that happened, here are other things that were true. And they talked about guys that are on the team, where they were in life when Justin Hilliard committed to the team. And I'm not going to remember all the details, but a couple of guys were, young in high school. And then the Garrett Wilson, the wide receiver, he's a freshman. They said he was between his seventh and eighth grade year when what is now a teammate committed to Ohio State. So I thought that was interesting, sort of puts in perspective. And then it does make you tip your cap. Guy's going through quite a lot. And here he is. Here he is with an opportunity to play again for the national title. I'm not rooting that he wins it, but definitely a guy that you can have some empathy for, and in that regard. So and I was looking forward to any sort of commentary that he might provide around that, and then just other commentary around the front seven. I was going to ask, and again, this is sort of the bury the lead thing, but I didn't want to sort of come out sort of flinging this, but I wanted to get his take on the COVID stories. And, at this point, we probably have a good conversation, and I'd say, all right, so, we can't get out of here without talking about, the COVID stories. And so what's interesting is I read an article today on an Ohio State site, and they referenced the COVID story, and this is just perfect college football. In their story, they specifically said a COVID story originating from Alabama, and then there was a link to the story, and it was the same John Talty story that we've all read that was almost accusatory of Ohio State sort of playing in the COVID thing. So I just thought that was funny that they pointed to that article and said, a story that originated in Alabama, like we're making this shit up. And I was going to, you know, hopefully have some fun conversation with that. But although that was funny, I thought, yeah, that's, you know, somewhere along the line, we deserve that. And that's just kind of how college football goes. And writing for college football, it's so insular who you're writing for. And so what you write relative to who you're writing for. So I got a kick out of that. The last thing that I was going to ask him about is, you know, I wanted to ask him about Ryan Day, and specifically Ryan Day replacing Urban Meyer. And, you know, I was going to say, you know, again, it sucks to sort of set up a joke rather than just let it go. But, I was going to say something to the effect that, you know, rumor has it that Coach Saban will be stepping down at some point. Hopefully not soon, but you know, that's going to be a hard transition. And the Ryan Day to Urban Meyer, theoretically, is a similarly hard transition. It's a legendary coach that's stepping down. And so, and then the whole sort of acts about, you don't want to be the guy who follows the guy, yada, yada. And the transition to Ryan Day has looked easy. It's looked almost too easy. Like, when's the bottom going to fall out of this? It looks like that. And so I wanted to sort of get his perspective on that. Like, how did they do it, sort of jokingly, but like, really, what was the mechanic that was in place to make that happen? And what did you look for? What did you see or notice or look for sort of along the way as they were leading up to the transition, as they were affecting the transition, sort of post-transition? What did you look for? What were sort of the milestones that you saw sort of along the way that sort of gave you confidence that, hey, this is going to work? And I'm very serious about that, because I think that, you know, Saban is masterful in researching and talking to people, learning, sort of developing. There was even a quote or something. I'm going to butcher it, but there was something just recently that was put out. And you know, Saban said everything that he does, everything that he's doing, he's repurposed from someone else. And some of it he's evolved, some of it he's changed, some of it he's whatever. But he basically said, I haven't made any of this stuff up. I am repurposing it from other people, whatever the quote went. And so you think with that mindset, and you see such a smooth transition, and you know Saban's going to want to do it right, and he's going to want to leave the program as healthy as he can. In good hands when he transitions. I just wonder if he and Urban, I don't know what their relationship is, but I wonder if they have a conversation at some point about that. And I guess he probably needs to be careful doing that, because, you know, you don't want Urban sort of leaking stuff, but about timing. But in terms of the how, I just think, you know, I don't know. I'm just impressed with how that transition has taken place at Ohio State. And I was going to sort of pick his thought press on that. And then I think, if I hadn't worked it in already, I didn't have it specifically as a question, but I've had it sort of in my reservoir, and I've thought about this multiple times during the season, before the season. It has influenced a lot that I've done this season. My preseason, if I was a little over the top in some of my preseason stuff, it turns out I wasn't wrong. But if I was a little over the top, and I think I've talked about this in maybe some of the Zoom calls, but there was something that I saw in the preseason, even before we knew that there was going to be a season. And it was Rodney Orr on Tighter Insider. He posted something that really just sort of lit a fire under me and said, you know, to the effect that if there's no season, then this is the last time we've seen these players suit up and play at Alabama. And it was all the guys that we're in love with. It was Najee. It was Devontae. It was Mack. It was Leatherwood. It was Landon. It was all of these guys, right? And it was Surtain. And I looked at that list. I remember looking at that list, and this was July-ish. I remember looking at that list saying, and it was 10 players. I remember that specifically. It was 10 players. And I remember looking at it and saying, that's a list of players that can win a national title. And I had this visceral sort of, oh no, like slipping out of my hands. If we don't get to see these guys play, then we are missing a potential national title. And I let that sort of, and so that's where I got the idea that we're going to go through this season. We're going to make it look easy, because if these guys get to play when they came back, and most of them could have gone pro. So they came back with some intention, and then they almost lost that. And now they get it back. Has there ever been a group that's been as motivated as this? And so that's been sort of my internal sort of drumbeat this season. And then we see the awards. Holy shit, how the team has sort of panned out. And I think if there's another fan base, and probably most of you can identify with something similar to that with this Alabama team. If there's been another fan base, and it wasn't a question on my list, because I'm not sure how you distill this down to, you know, 8-word question. But if there's another fan base that had a similar sense of these guys won't come back, and they are as talented a group as maybe we've seen in a minute, if we don't get them to play, then we may be losing out on a chance to win a national title. If there's another team that feels that in a way that approximates how we feel it, it's Ohio State. And you can say Clemson, but that's largely because of Etienne and Trevor Lawrence. I don't know that there's a list of 8 or 9 or 12 guys that you would put on that list, like I think you would with Ohio State, like I think you do with Alabama. And so, and you know, the fact that those are the top three teams, probably no surprise. And so anyways, I was going to figure out how to work that in, because I think that's a hell of a topic. And I know that I've had fun sort of layering that backdrop into a lot of the podcasts, a lot of the Zoom calls, a lot of the preseason stuff. And it's sort of been a motivating drive for me. And when we see things happen, it's like, yes, that's, you know, when you hear me say, this is what we're expecting, it's happening, then that's been fueled by that. So I wanted to get sort of another team's perspective on that same point, if indeed they felt the same way. So anyway, I've kind of rambled on that. And so this is going to be quick and short, and it's been anything but that last one was harder to sort of wrap up. And so here we are at 30 minutes. The interview itself probably would have been shorter than that. Anyways, we know what we do. We know how it is when I get on a roll. So there you have it. That was the non-interview edition of the Ohio State pregame. I am really going to effort to, so I'm going to keep my notes, not throw them out. I'm going to keep my notes, and I'm really going to effort to get that interview back on so that you can hear all of those questions again, but someone else answer them besides me. So we'll go with that. In the meantime, hey, you know what to do. Come on. Roll Tide.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.